Hello, good evening.
Welcome to It Is Possible Tuesdays with Sanya. I am excited to have you all here with me today. We have a very special guest all the way from the Caribbean. And I am happy that she's able to make it today because the Caribbean, Jamaica in particular, has been having flooding. And so I'm happy with the weather report that I've received so far that it is sunny in Jamaica. And we are happy to welcome my special guest whose surname begins with the letter D and whose first name begins with the letter T. I knew her from a very long time ago when she was a baby. And it is my pleasure to have on our program today, Miss Toni Ann Davis. Toni Ann, welcome to our It Is Possible Tuesdays platform. We're very happy to have you.
Thank you.
Now, I know a little bit about you, and I'm going to try to tease out a lot from you so that you can share it with our guests today. But first of all, I want to start off by saying that you are a clinical psychologist. Now, tell me a little bit about what it is that a clinical psychologist does.
Okay, well, currently I work with Northeast Regional Health Authority in Jamaica. That's the equivalent to the Ministry of Health in the UK as well as Ministry of Health and Human Services in the US. Mm-hmm. And as a clinical psychologist in Jamaica, mm-hmm. on a whole, can work at the master's level and the PhD level. Currently, I'm a master's level psychologist. And what I do is I offer assessments of mental health challenges. So, for example, for the child who presents with learning challenges at school, but also presents with some level of hyperactivity, the child who is possibly acting in a bizarre way, maybe feeling things that are not there, hearing things that are not there, or even experiencing trauma from even the most simplest things to the most complex things, like even a death of a family member or injury in a car accident, all the things that would encompass mental health. As a clinical psychologist, I assess for them. I use tools similar to what the doctor would use, the psychiatrist would use, but just that I don't prescribe medication. So I do the same assessments for mental health issues, mental illnesses, but also instead of using medication, I use therapies as a modality in which I help these individuals get to a place where they can better cope with what challenges they're having. That doesn't mean that I don't work with the doctors. I work closely with the psychiatrist because there are some cases in which medication would be required as a part of the therapeutic regimen along with psychotherapy.
Okay. Now, wow, that is a big portfolio. And you're not old. You are a young person. I won't tell anybody your age at this time. I'll allow them to learn about it a little later on. But you seem to have a very large a lot of responsibility. Now let me ask you this: is a clinical psychologist similar to an educational psychologist, or are they on different platforms?
Well, a clinical, both, well, let me tell you first, a clinical psychologist and a educational psychologist are both similar in respect that they can do certain assessments. The educational psychologist may do assessments that the clinical psych may do, but it is geared primarily towards improving the educational ability of the child. However, for the clinical psychologist, the individual deals with diagnosing mental health issues that are clinically based that would probably require the child coming in to see a doctor, a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, or a mental health officer, which could be a nurse or even another mental health professional in the field. So the ed psych does not deal with, for example, the ed psych would not necessarily deal with diagnosing depression. Okay. But the clinical psychologist would be able to diagnose and treat the depression in collaboration with the medical doctor, who probably would be the psychiatrist if needed. The educational psychologist is not necessarily trained to do those higher level assessments that would require clinical evaluation.
Okay, so all right. Now, you spoke about assessing for the young person. Tell me what this assessment, what form does this assessment take? Is it like me studying for a test and sitting down and writing out answers, or is it something else?
Okay, so for assessment in the field of psychology, and that would include probably an educational psychologist or a school psychologist who does assessments, it's actually written written tasks or even verbal tasks that are required of them. So we don't give them any injections or anything like that, but they are required to do a series of testing, which may require them to write out things, to tell us things verbally and which we're able to key in or otherwise. And then sometimes a psychological assessment or evaluation does not only include the tools that the psychologist or the psychiatrist would use. It would also include probably getting an MRI, a CT, all of the other evaluations. So it's a collaborative evaluation that for the psychologist requires the child or the individual answering questions and filling out, putting things together, probably with their hands, like blocks, designs and so forth. But it's both tactile and verbal.
Okay.
As well as written in its composition.
Okay. Wow. Ooh, that's a lot of information coming, and a lot of complicated things that you do. Now, if you don't mind, how old are you? What age range are you?
I think I am 33. I honestly lost count after it fell off the calendar.
Oh, wow. You're in your 30s. Wow. And you seem to have done quite a lot and are doing quite a lot. You know, I did a little research, and you have a LinkedIn page, and it says that you want to serve your clients to the best of your ability. You want to empower them with skills that will help them to advance in their careers and to cope with their challenges and improve their psychological functioning. And based on what you have said so far, I think that you seem to be hitting all of those targets bang on the head. Tell me a little bit about your childhood, Tony Ann, because we see you now as a clinical psychologist, assessing and helping people. Give me an idea of who Tony Ann is. Tell me about your early childhood.
Okay, so for those who may not know, I am an only child, and it wasn't intentional.
Okay.
But when I was born, I was born with mild cerebral palsy, that is weakening of one side of the body. And for me, it was the right side, which meant that my limbs, which would be my elbows, my hands, my feet, on the right side had challenges being able to stand, to move, to function.
Okay.
And so because of the challenge that I was born with, I also had what we call seizures. So I had a seizure disorder with it. And because of that, my parents had to be going with me to the hospital quite frequently. And so due to the time that I grew up in and my parents were in, they believed that, okay, it didn't make sense to have another child yet. Mm-hmm. And we were having to spend so much money on this one because they were trying to make ends meet, working hard, everything. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, I had a lot of physiotherapy to do. I also had a number of surgeries, but I also had seizures, which often would see me in the hospital quite frequently, having partial complex seizures. This is where you don't necessarily shake and get jittery. You just fall asleep. And that might happen for probably 5 to 15 minutes. And then the afterglow, which is what I call it, where I would be so tired and have a headache and be miserable and everything. Mm. That would be so frequent that after a while, I used to live in the hospital. But the good thing about it was that whenever I woke up, I found it so wonderful that whenever I woke up, I always saw my parents there.
Mm.
You know, no matter what happened, both mommy and daddy would always be there. If it's not mommy, it's daddy.
Yeah. I see when yeah. I would.
And
yeah.
they would do what they could to just ease the stress because they knew it was very stressful. At the time too, because my right hand and my right foot was slightly deformed, I had to do several surgeries to make it workable. And over the years, I've gone through schooling where I'm happy that a lot of the schooling that I've gone through was accommodating me. Because I finished my high school years in the U.S. And so the school that I was at, the public school that I was at, they were very attentive to the fact that, okay, she had surgeries to do abroad too. And we needed to ensure that she was able to get into school properly. Ramps and everything were there. And you had other specialized instructors who would be there to help you as well. And so for me, even though I was an only child, I was taught to value others. That's one thing my parents always taught me to. So people would ask me, are you really an only child? Yeah. But no, I believe for me, I think that has shaped who I am and who I am now and why I like to serve others.
Okay.
Because I believe that everybody needs a friend.
Okay, Tony, and just before you move on, you said you're an only child, and we're recognizing that although you're an only child, you're not a selfish only child. You're a giving only child. You spoke about the fact that your parents were always there, and you mentioned that you were born with CP, mild paralysis on the right hand side, and you also had seizures. Now, these seizures are not the type that we are usually aware of, where you shake. It's more like you have absences and you fall asleep, and it makes you very tired as well.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, that's quite a lot for a child to experience. How I know you spoke about your parents being there, and I think that helped you a lot, knowing that you had that support there. As you went through school, did you at any time say to yourself, why me? You were having seizures, you were living in the hospital, you had to have surgery on your hand and on your feet, or, you know, what were some of the thoughts that you were having?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, especially when I would have that afterglow after the seizures, and probably I'd be at home. And medications for me used to be something that the doctors changed very regularly, because what they realized was that the medication started to be toxic in my system. So after a while, my brain started to realize that, okay, so I'm used to this medication. It's not going to do anything to help. And so one of the things I used to ask myself was, why me? You know, and even to be honest, there were the time where I even felt like, okay, it doesn't even make sense. I live because this cannot be my life. This cannot be what I was meant to be doing. Wow. And you know, and surprisingly, even when I would feel like that, I would have my lonely days. Yes, there are times where I'd be so frustrated I'd cry. But I'd always remember that, guess what? Somebody's there not giving up on me, whether it's my parents, whether it's a friend, but there's always somebody there to push me on and say, look, it's going to be okay. Good. You know? And especially with the fact that my physical disability was visible even before I went to the U.S. in ninth grade, from kindergarten, possibly right up to the eighth grade, even especially in high school, I would have had individuals who, I think for want of not understanding what individuals experience, would exclude me from activities, would make me feel like I'm not worth it. But there would always be that one person who will make you feel much better than that throng of individuals who decide that, look, they didn't like how you looked, or that a cripple, you're crippled, and those the kind of things. So what I have learned over the time is that even though I feel like this at times, social support is something that has to be good. Even if it's not your parents, it's not your family, there must be at least one or two individuals who can pull you up and not necessarily discriminate or need to have something to say when they are actually pulling you up.
Yeah.
So there have been days when I've had those, I want to give up, I can't bother. But just the fact that I know I have a purpose and I have individuals who believe that I have a purpose.
Yes.
Makes me want to push harder.
Yeah. That support system is very important to have, to encourage you. And I like the word you use. You have a purpose. And there were people who believed that you had a purpose. And that is such a powerful statement. You affirm yourself. And I can see that your parents, having set the base for you, the foundation for you, being there for you, and then having supportive schoolmates was very helpful in your developing your confidence and your self-esteem, you know. Yes, there were bad days and people excluded you, but you were able to push through it. And you pushed through it. And, you know, I read something about your high school graduation. It was interesting because your graduation was a little different because you had to have assistive technology. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when as I said before, over the years, I've done a number of surgeries. While I was in high school, I actually did two surgeries with Shriners in Chicago. That's Shriners Hospital for Children. And surprisingly, my second surgery happened a week before I was slated to graduate.
Oh.
And so I was wheelchair bound in a green cast, being pushed up by my assistant principal, who literally told the hospital staff over there that ensure that everything that she has is green, because her gown is green. Everything. And let us know what we need to do to assist her. And so I had the support of my whole school and the administration. That is Lovely. The beautiful thing I must say about the US and the UK and some of our other countries, where the administrators themselves are actually very sensitive to challenges that their students have. And they try to do the best that they can to help these students without letting them feel like they're different.
Different, yes. Inclusive.
Yes, they're very inclusive.
Yes. Now, which high school did you attend in Jamaica?
I actually attended Belier High School in Jamaica, and when I went to the US in Michigan, while my mother was studying for her PhD in educational psychology, I went to Bering Springs High School.
Okay. And you mentioned that at the schools you had specialists. What equipment? What could you identify some of the things that we would see in either the Belair School or the Bering Springs School?
Well, in Bering Springs, well, at Belair, interestingly, well, before Belair became public, because I went to Belair when Belair was still up. The Belair School at the time, well, that's what it was called, was actually based off a dual Jamaican-Canadian curriculum.
Okay.
So their administrators were Canadian. Mm-hmm. And so while I was at Belair, they had a special ed class that they would allow this student to come out of the regular class, mm-hmm. and just take the time and sit down, do the assignments in that class with a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I went to Bering Springs, the classes were much more, the special ed classes or the resource room that they would call it, because they don't necessarily call it special ed classes.
Mm-hmm.
They call it the resource room, and there were more lecturers in the resource room. So they would probably take me out for math class. And mm-hmm. they, even though I could do the math, I may not have been able to do it as fast as the other children.
Okay.
So they would take me out, and I would be assigned a resource teacher, and the person will go through the assignments with me, the same assignments given that day,
mm-hmm.
but at a slower pace.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
While that was done in Bering Springs, it was done on a more limited scale at Belair.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a few classes where I would have been able to come out of, and they would assist me in getting more time for my classes.
Okay. So would that also be done in your exams? Would you be given extra time in your exams? Would you have, what other help would you be given in school?
Well, much of the help that I would have been given, especially for exams, where I would have been given additional 50% time or even 25% time, additional half hour or additional hour, would have been effective from 9th grade to the 12th grade at Bering Springs. The reason being is that what I have noticed, well, based on how Bering Springs is set up, for every child who comes in, especially if they're international students, scholastic and achievement, intellectual and achievement testing is done.
Okay.
And so what they do is that they're able to see where you're a little bit slower, and if needs be, they're able to pull you out and recommend that you do additional classes or otherwise.
Okay. Now, you have your challenges, but you have a bachelor's in psychology and a minor in business ed. And then you went on to do what?
I went on to do a master's in clinical psychology, and now I'm attempting to work on my PhD, my PsyD in clinical psychology.
Okay. You started by saying your PhD, but you said something else. What was the other thing?
It's actually the psychology doctorate. So currently I'm not doing the PhD, which is the doctor of philosophy. I'm doing more of a specialist medical, slightly more scientific, medically based psychology degree at the doctoral level. So they call it the PsyD, which is the Doctor of Psychology degree.
Okay. And could you share with us what your focus is, what your research is on?
Well, I'm currently not at the research level yet because I'm actually just finished my first year because I'm actually doing it on a blended program where I do it online and in-house, because currently, as you know, many Jamaicans and many individuals would have to work to pay for school.
Yeah.
So that's currently what I'm doing. So I still work with Northeast Regional Health Authority, but I'm actually still studying at the same time.
Okay, lovely. Congratulations on such a big move. You know, you had your challenges. You're not daunted by it. You have your bachelor's in psychology and a minor in business ed, and you have a master's from Walden University in clinical psychology, and you're working on your psych ed. Did I get that right?
The PsyD.
PsyD in clinical psychology. From us, and I think I speak on behalf of everybody, congratulations on how far you have gone and how much you have accomplished in your life despite your challenges. Now, is there anything that you find limiting for yourself?
Well, for me, I've always found doing certain little things limited. So, but I've always known that, guess what? Even though I want to try, I can ask for help. Fantastic. And that's one of the things that over the years, I've had to teach myself and remind myself. For example, I've always said to individuals that some people take peeling an orange for granted.
Yes.
I have to hold the orange onto my chest and use the left hand and turn the orange until I get it. So things like those. So the little things are what are more harder for me, things that I'd have to grasp, things that I'd have probably reaching high places and pulling things down. But at the same time, what I appreciate about it, that one, my parents have always said, try.
Yes.
My father is literally not afraid to see blood. So he'll say, try. But he knows that, okay, if she need the orange peel, she'll go ask me anyway.
Yes.
And so there are certain things that over time, I've been able to know that, okay, it's either I ask for help or they are going to
assist you
to do it for me.
Yes.
And for me, as an individual growing up now, I'm living on my own. I work far from my actual home base. So I live in St. Catherine. Home is Mandeville, where mommy and daddy is.
Yeah.
But I've learned that, one, I now have to have patience with other people who want to understand me, because they may take it for granted that I can do something that I can't do.
Yes.
Because I've always been trying and I don't let anything calm me down, I can actually do it.
Yes.
So I've learned to be more patient with people who are trying to learn. And at the same time, I do have a few, I don't have a lot of friends, but I have a few individuals who understand me and know that, okay, the little things that she may not necessarily ask for help for, those are the things that she actually needs.
Needs the help, yes, yes.
So while I will cook, it might take me a little bit longer, but there are certain things that I will do that are limiting. For example, even recently, my aunt got me one of those cosmetic gowns. Not because I'm doing anybody's hair, but because to peel a yam, noticed that I had to be putting it
on your chest. Yes.
And so she noticed that, okay, so Tonian is going to always be peeling this yam. But and even though she peel it good, by the time she finishes, her clothes is going to be dirty.
Yes.
And so she bought me a cosmetic gown and said, okay, Tonian, put that on when you're in the kitchen. When you're doing what you're doing, then you just put it in the wash to be washed.
Yes.
And we do it like that again. And so
you adapt your situation and things, you know, peeling the orange, peeling the yam. Are you left-handed by design or circumstance?
I think I'm left-handed by circumstance. I probably would have been right-handed or ambidextrous.
Yes.
But I think I'm more left-handed by circumstance.
But you're doing well, Tony Ann. I mean, you mentioned that you're peeling your orange and you're peeling yam, and yam is not an easy thing to peel because when you start peeling, it start get slippery, you know.
But
you have done well not to hurt yourself. And on top of being able to peel yam and orange, you also drive yourself.
Yes, I've actually been in the job as a psychologist, which in Jamaica, working with the government of Jamaica, in any respect, you're required to be a traveling officer, which means that many of your bases in which you work, you have to travel to. So you have one direct base, and then you actually have to go to other bases to offer the same services. And so from 2015, actually in 2011, I was able to get my license. And in Jamaica, persons with disabilities, have to go through a different procedure to get their license. It's not well known, and I think we need to do more on educating individuals. But I actually had to have a superintendent of police in the vehicle while I was doing the exam.
Okay.
And since that, I actually did the exam twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the second time around, the superintendent came. I did what I had to do, and I passed my exam. But I have been driving on my own from 2015 when I started the job in St. Anne with NERA.
Okay. And is your car modified in any way?
Well, no. Well, not at all, you know. I have the same brakes, the same steering. I had a family member of mine, one of my dad's brothers, who was working on getting the vehicle modified. But after a while, being that I could function with the regular vehicle, it was not necessarily followed through, and we didn't necessarily recommend it again.
Yeah. But, so is it an automatic that you're driving?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So it's the automatic, and you still maneuver it confidently enough to have passed and to be driving in Jamaica and on St. Anne Road. Well, fantastic.
St. Anna, St. Anne, Portland, St. Mary.
Junction Road?
Every road. I work for the region. And so I'm currently based in St. Anne, because each parish has its own psychologist. But recently they've not hired two other psychologists for Portland and St. Mary. Yeah. And so I go to Portland with my team and nearly every other Tuesday and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It's 218 kilometers.
Mm.
Well, 109 one way to hospital in Port Antonio. And to come, you know, you have to come back.
Exactly.
And so, The traveling has become easier over time. When I first started it, I was really tired.
Yeah.
After just going to my own base in St. Anne, which was Alexandria, I was tired.
Yes.
And so, but after a while, you get used to it as a traveling officer. You realize that you have to get to where you're going for 8 o'clock, 8:30, and you have to get back to where you need to be. So it is fun.
Yeah. Tony Ann, I am just impressed with your can-do attitude. And, you know, I know your dad and I know your mother, and I know that I see them in you with the attitude that you're presenting and the way you're just talking as though, I mean, this is the norm. This is what my life is. I just have to get on with it. I pray that God will continue to be with you and continue to just open the doors for you. Now,
thank you.
Is there anybody on my panel who would like to say anything to Tony Ann or ask her a question at this time? Miss B, is that you? Are you going to ask a question? Anybody? Okay, I'm going to take your silence for the fact that
I just want to say
yes, Lisa.
Thank you, Tony Ann, for sharing it's just really inspirational to kind of just hear how you've just maneuvered and just managed your way through life despite the challenges you face. So many people who are able-bodied don't even kind of do half the stuff that you've done. And so it's like, I really do like sort of take my hat off to you, and you know, you've really inspired me just listening to you today. So yeah, thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
I'd like to second that motion.
Thanks, in terms of
what I've been said, 100%. It seems like our sister here, she has a mindset in terms of she knows where she's going, and she's going to get there either by the hook or the crook. So I just want to say that the Lord bless you and keep you, and may you go.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say may the Lord continue to bless you, and may you continue as you are.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay. Sanya, you know, there's one thing that I must say, and I think I forgot to say, is that one of the things, being where I am now,
yes,
I actually had a supervisor who actually believed in me.
Yes.
I did my field internship with the region, mm-hmm. and the supervisor that I had, I remember when I was leaving the region, I applied for a social work position, mm-hmm. and she came back to me and she said, "Tony, and I'm tearing up that resume."
Wow.
Because guess what? When a psychology position becomes available, I am going to shortlist you. You have to do the rest, though. You have to show them what you've learned.
Yes.
And, you know, it's next year would be 6 years in the job on the 2-3 year contract.
Wow.
And I remember I said to Dr. Bell, Dr. Pernell, she's an awesome person. I said to her, I said, "Doc, you know, I appreciate the fact that you gave me a fighting chance." Mm-hmm. And, you know, she smiled and she said, "I gave you a chance, but it wasn't a fighting chance." You pushed yourself. You showed the region that you could do what was required of you, and you have proven yourself.
Fantastic.
And I am proud of that. And so it goes to show that for individuals with disabilities, it's also important for the environment that they're in to be one that's self-promoting.
Yes.
And also uplifting, because I have team members who don't look at me like I have a disability. They don't say that you can't do this, you can't do that.
Yes.
They have the same mentality that I want you to do is try.
Yes.
If you need help, you ask.
Fantastic.
And so I must say that the environment that I'm in for work as well has proven to be beneficial for me and for those who I work with and those who I serve.
Fantastic. So the Jamaican environment seems to be on the right track in terms of awareness, and not just being aware, but putting into place things that will help persons with disability. Do you think that more can be done?
I do believe that a lot more can be done.
Okay.
And I must say that we've come a far way, but we're not where we need to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I must say that I am blessed. And I say blessed because it can't be anything else other than God working.
Yes.
I am blessed to be in a child guidance or a child and adolescent mental health service unit.
Mm-hmm.
That is the way it is, that even when other regions see it, they wonder how the team works so good together.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, we value everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We don't look at anybody as being above or below.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody depends on the same level. Everybody can achieve what they set out to achieve. But it's mm-hmm. also important that everybody asks for help if they need help.
Yes.
And so my supervisor, I've heard of instances where in the same child guidance unit across other regions, they have challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like it's not a workable environment.
Mm-hmm.
But the the idea that we work with, especially in the Northeast, and I've appreciated it as far as I've been with the team, is that we work as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a family, you uplift each other. You do tell each other when they're going wrong or they're not on the right path.
Yes.
But you do it in a caring attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we come into the workspace, you feel relieved. You feel like it's a therapeutic environment.
Yes.
And so there are several jobs that I applied for, even in the government sector, before I applied for the NERAD job, and they all rejected me, including the Ministry of Labor and Social Security, which is supposed to be an equal,
disability-friendly
unit. So we still have a far way to go. And I think most important that we spoke about earlier is that the support system has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you get a job and if the environment is hostile, it's not going to work well with your mental health.
Yes.
And you're going to feel like you're not good enough. You might go into places where you start to feel like you're depressed, that you start to be showing mental health issues, which initially you're there to treat.
Yes, yes.
But you're there to work with individuals who have these issues and be a support system for them. You're actually now the person who needs the help.
Yeah.
And so it's not to say that you won't have any issues, but the environment should be one that is promoting. And I mean, I could talk all day about it, but my supervisor, I must say, Dr. Bell knows, even though she's a licensed clinical psychologist at the PhD level for years, she customizes how she relates to you. So even though she might be a supervisor, if it is that you need a mother figure, she's there.
Mm-hmm.
If it is that you need a supervisor who will go around and make sure that you do everything properly, she's there. If it is that you work better on your own and just need a little support, she's there.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows, the way she does her thing is that even after you come out of the system every day or you leave the workplace, you actually feel like it's a therapeutic environment, even for you as a therapist.
Mm-hmm. It's a safe space.
Very much so.
And it nurtures. And everybody's work environment should be a safe space and one that they feel comfortable and confident in to show their competence, you know? And from what I'm hearing, where you are, that's happening. But you would like to see that throughout the employment field in Jamaica.
Definitely.
As it relates to persons of disability. Now, Tony Ann, I know, I remember you're saying that when you were in school, you were in your special ed classes and sometimes you'd get extra time because things would take you a longer time to do. This didn't stop you from achieving your degrees, but you also were able to receive some awards. Can you tell me about what is the golden key on a society?
Well, golden key was introduced to me when I was at Walden University at the master's level. Golden key is actually it's an honor society for individuals who are performing within the top 5% of their cohort or the school population itself.
Mm.
And so while doing the master's, I was able to work hard enough to the point that I was offered the ability to join the Golden Key Honor Society. And it's by invitation only. So your administrators, just like how a student might get the president's award or the dean's, beyond the dean's list, it has to be by invitation only. And I was honored to be asked to join that honor society. And similarly, with working with studying at California Southern, I had been offered the same.
Wow. Well done. Fantastic. Top 5% of the school population and by invitation. That is awesome. And we continue to laud you and say congratulations to you. Now, if you had a magic wand, what would you want to be able to do with that magic wand?
If I had a magic wand, I would want for our world to be disability friendly, and in the same breath that all individuals who have disabilities are given equal opportunities to feel wanted and to make something of themselves or feel that they are competent.
Fantastic. I know that you have ambitions to be with the United Nations. What is that about? Give us a little.
Well, I do, as an individual, one of the things that I probably might get tired of me saying it, but I love the fact that Dr. Bell has always instilled in her team that don't work to stay at the place where you are. Work to keep moving up the ladder. And I've always wanted to work with the UN, especially when it comes to working with UNICEF, because I understand that there are many children. I was a child too. There are many individuals, many children who just need somebody to be there, somebody to mentor them, somebody to be able to forge pathways in which they can have a better quality of life, a better quality of education, a better quality of just being a holistic person. And so for me, my heart is out there with helping these individuals. I went into the public service not because I want a good salary, and clearly for all of us who work in the public system all over, the salary not hot. But I went into the public system because I want to help others. I know I have a mission, I have a purpose. And if tomorrow I'm supposed to die, at least no one who I encounter should be able to say, boy, she did bad, you know, she never do a thing to help me. No, man. I want people to be impacted by just me trying to help them become better to improve their quality of life.
Ah, Tony Ann, you are an inspiration. You know, I am excited. I'm happy that you are on today. I'm happy about the message you're sending by the words that you say and by your life. You know, you want to forge opportunities. You want to help people. You're a public servant. You have a mission. You want to know that you are impacted others, you know, and made their lives better. And for a young person of 33, that is a very giving attitude, very selfless, and we commend you. We wish you all the very best on this journey. You know, you are nurturing just the way you sound, just the things that you do. You know, you are cognizant of the people who have helped you and you want to pass it along. There's this strong sense of passing things along and not just keeping things for yourself, but also moving upward and outward, and so that you can have more impact more impact on those who need it. I'm just so happy that you're here today. I'm really happy. And our time is almost gone. And I know that it's 2:00, minutes to 3 in Jamaica. Thank you ever so much, Tony Ann, for being with us today on It Is Possible. Indeed, your life, your story has shown us that it is possible. There are no limitations except in attitude. And your very positive attitude is opening so many doors and pathways for you to continue to do well. Thank you ever so much. I need to find out, is there anybody who wants to say anything else before we go off tonight? I know you're just all just soaking up everything that Tony Ann has to say. And if I were able to remove your cameras, I'm sure that I'd see everybody's head nodding away, just soaking it up. Thank you very much, Tony Ann. It has been a privilege and an honor to have you with us today. We have learned so much from you and about you, and we want to wish you well. Indeed, you have shown us that it is possible. You know, a clinical psychologist from the little girl who has CP, right hemiparalysis, now presently working with the NERA, working with CAMS, working with the adult mental services, and working on your PhD, the equivalent to the PhD. well done to you. And you know, for I know that you are a Christian. I know that you believe in God. You've spoken about the fact that it could only be God who has been blessing you. And we pray that he continues to bless you and to give you continued success. Thank you ever so much, Donianne.
Thank you. And thank you all. I really appreciate it. And please keep praying for me.
We will. We most certainly will. Thank you very much, everybody. It Is Possible Tuesdays returns next week. Thank you for being here. And thank you for being your usual supportive self. I really do appreciate the fact that you're here with us every week. See you next week on It Is Possible Tuesdays. We have another very interesting and fascinating guest. See you. Thank you.